Hey, everybody. This is a early episode of Horror Movie Night. As you always know, when there is a really big horror film coming out, we have to sit down and do it in theaters. Now, usually we're joined by a guest, but Brian, our little entrepreneur, is going to be filming a short that you'll probably be seeing in like a month or so. So we had to record super early, and most of the people who guest on these things are in different time zones. So you will not hear Katie. You won't hear Stephen Bay. You're not going to hear any of them on this episode. It's just your normal ghostly trio over here. So we'll do a real quick spoiler-free talk about what we thought about Us. And then after about 2 minutes of this, you're going to want to shut this off if you haven't seen the movie. So let's just start off with a simple recommend or don't recommend to let people know if it's worth their time. I'll start with Brian, because Brian's been the most secretive of the three of us.
I definitely recommend it to be seen.
Okay. I think we're all going to land in the same spot.
I'll say this. From expectations, like reality versus expectations scale of 1 to 10, the movie is a 2. From like overall movie 1 to 10, it's like a 6 or a 7. I would definitely put it above, out of the in theaters I've done, I'd put it above Halloween, but I would think I'd put it below Quiet Place and Hereditary.
Okay. I would say, what I'll say is that there were points during the movie when I thought this was a 5-star out of 5-star movie, and then there were other points where I was like, maybe it's not. So I definitely had my mind changed. And it's still changing. It's been 2 days since I've seen it now. And as I keep reading more things about it and like looking into it more, the more like my thought process evolves from it. What I will say, and this is the most minorest of spoilers, but it's actually a celebration, is like the trailer did a really good job of really only showing you the first 20 minutes of the movie. And then I had no clue what to expect after there was a point where I'm like, oh, everything that's happened, I've already seen in the trailer. And there's still like an hour and a half of this movie. Like, that's kind of dope. That never happens.
Yeah.
So don't think that the movie's been spoiled for you by the trailers, because it really hasn't. The trailer is just what the setup is. And that's awesome.
And I think the only spoiler I want to say, because I think it's a helpful spoiler, and I think if I knew it, I might have enjoyed it better. Go into this movie expecting to see a dark comedy and not a horror movie.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment too. Scott, where are you at on it?
So I think it's an imperfect film, but it's original. So yeah. I'll take an imperfect original over a franchise or a remake any day. I was talking to a buddy of mine yesterday. We're going to call him Sci-Fi Steve, because he likes sci-fi more than horror, and his name is Steve. So I was talking to him about the fact that I had seen it on Thursday night, and he said he'd heard good things. I told Mario, who you guys know, and he was like, oh, I heard bad things. I'm like, it's kind of par for the course with Hollywood stuff. But
there's going to be a lot of divide on this. I think this is going to be a very divisive movie regardless.
I think it's because
you can't say it's a bad movie.
No, it's a really well made. I mean, it's beautiful to look at. I think that the only negative thing I have to say is that there were some plot decisions that I didn't agree with. That's all there is.
Errors. Yeah.
Yeah. But here's the thing, is that I didn't get the hype of Get Out. Like, I watched it on VOD. I didn't see it in theaters. And I liked Get Out, but I think that Get Out telegraphs what it is very early on. And this movie is much better at holding the cards close to its chest about what it is. Like, all the signs are there, but when you get into the meat of the story, you're like, oh, this went that way.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, so I will say this much. As soon as the movie ended, Scott and I got on the phone with each other because we had feelings that we needed to like speak to someone about. And after reading a couple articles about like, oh, well, this is what this meant, and this is what this was about, and like these were the hints, and these were the, like, I don't completely forgive the things that I disliked, but I am more understanding and appreciative towards them than I was immediately leaving the theater. So if you leave the theater with a bad taste in your mouth, definitely do a little bit of research because it might help.
but I didn't do any research.
Well, I also think that a lot of people don't want would you consider this to be kind of an indie picture compared, because it's not a blockbuster, right?
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I mean, it's, I think Monkey Paw is Jordan Peele's company, yeah, right? So like he independently produced and financed this movie. Like he had more money than the normal independent filmmaker had, but it's still technically, I would still call it
an indie. I feel it's
indie in the way that like Zach Braff's movies are indie. Like he has a lot of money to back his indie film versus like Kevin Smith doing Clerks, where you had to max out credit cards to hope that you'll have enough money to rent the film stock. Like,
yeah. Well, so I guess the reason why I mentioned that is because I considering it an indie film, I guess that you're kind of riding the line of, are people going to want to delve deeper into what things meant in the film and the you know, the writer director's motivations and the cultural significance and the historical significance of the setting and things like that. I mean, like, I like that stuff. I'll geek out on that stuff. I'm not expecting everybody that goes to see us to do that. But that's I think that enriches the experience. That's what I'm getting at.
And I mean, to be fair, it's not, seeing a movie shouldn't come with homework. You know what I mean?
Like, but I think that there's a place for that, and I like
there is. And what I'm saying is, like, I enjoy that too, but like I also get, if someone's like, hey, I just want to see a movie, I don't want to do homework afterwards, like, valid. Like, totally get it.
This movie definitely works as a mindless popcorn flick if you want it to, because there's a lot of action. Like I said on our Instagram, I called it a thriller, and someone was like, oh, you're calling it a thriller. I'm like, well, it's kind of an Easter egg too, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's very fair. But I think at this point, we'll stop talking cryptic. We'll give about 5 seconds of silence. And then after that, if you continue listening and you hear all the spoilers, you cannot complain to us. This is a legally binding statement.
All right. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Now they really can't blame us.
Yeah, seriously. I think when I left the theater, I thought that the movie was great, and then it failed to stick the landing in the last 5 minutes.
That's what
and
you told
really,
me.
Yeah, so it really bummed me out.
One thing that I want to almost take away from Jordan Peele, but then I have to give back to him, is figured out the twist in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, I was feeling that too.
But I did change my mind at some point because it didn't work. And honestly, I think that the whole twist of the movie still would have worked. And like my biggest thing walking away from it is I wish that their family escaped, because like, it's just, there's just a lot of things that didn't work for me, where it's like the entire world got out of this shadow. You know what I mean? Like, I almost think it would be a better movie if they were just like, I was expecting halfway through, it was like, okay, this is like, this shadow family is fucking raising hell while this family is going to try to get away, you know, as opposed to every single person's doppelganger, is out killing. And
so here's, I'll start with the things that I had an issue with, and I'll also bring up some of the things that I read that kind of made more sense and stuff like that. But like, now here's where I don't, when the villain, quote unquote, is explaining the tethered, uh-huh, she says that they're man-made, right?
Yeah.
She, okay, so I read up on it. You know, I read some things as well, and she says she doesn't know. Like, I specifically remember her saying she thinks that they were man-made, but then somebody took that literally in some thought opinion piece that I read yesterday that said that they were man-made in like decades ago. So we're thinking like, and I get it. I'm thinking that if this is like Jordan Peele talking about the Tuskegee experiment, which is where the government gave black people syphilis, and then they watched them decay, like the progression of the disease. So if that's what he was thinking, and he hasn't said that in interviews that I know of. But if that's what he's going for, okay. But it was more ambiguous in the movie where Red, the Lupita's doppelganger, Tether, says she thinks that they were man-made or not. She said, like,
gotcha.
I think she says something like, we were made and then forgotten about. But the thing is that I don't feel like it's a science experiment. I think that this was there was some sort of god or magic involved. Not a god, but magic involved.
I'm way more accepting if it's a god thing. Because like if it's a man-made thing, it brings a question of like, well, why?
Did explain that. They said that the tethered were made to control the people above. Because you know, the boy and the pyro, Pluto is the name of the pyro version. But he can control him, and that's why he puts him into the flaming
car. That makes sense.
Actually, here's the problem that I have with the tethered in general is that they are. I don't have a problem with where they came from. Let's just say. Thought experiment. It doesn't matter who made them, but the conceit is that they are cloned versions of people in the real world. Let's just say in Santa Cruz, because that's where the movie takes place. Santa Cruz, right?
Yeah, because it's a Lost Boys reference.
Oh yeah, Santa Clara.
because that's apparently supposed to be in the very beginning when the mom says, oh, they're filming a movie over there. Jordan Peele is opened up of like, that was his little Easter egg of like, oh, they're filming the Lost Boys in 1986 at this place.
And that is one thing I want to really give to Jordan Peele, which like, you know, I love fucking Rob Zombie, but one thing Jordan Peele does way better than Rob Zombie is to pay homage to horror movies in such a subtle way.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to bash over the head with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I really think, and I can't even say for sure, but not to jump to the end, but I feel like I saw it in the theater live and thinking about it, I think it was, is that last scene where her tether tries to kill her and she ends up killing her. I feel like that was paying homage to Psycho. Like when Norman Bates turns out to be the mom, just like the whole angle that she came on, the face she made when she stabbed her, like it seemed like a real subtle ode to the original Psycho.
So I was telling Scott when we were talking on the phone immediately after seeing the movie, I was saying that the thing I want to do is get a good quality screenshot of what all the VHS tapes are next to the TV in the opening scene, because Chud is in there, and Chud is very much what this movie is inspired by because of the people in the sewer coming out and attacking. But then one of the other tapes I definitely saw was Nightmare on Elm Street. And I think that there's definitely a boiler room look to when she goes
down the into the tub.
Yeah.
And like, there was a copy of The Goonies next to it, which is also a subterranean.
There was The Goonies. There was a home video that just had writing on it that I couldn't read.
Yeah. Okay. That's what
there was The Right Stuff.
Yeah. I don't know what The Right Stuff plays. Yeah. I remember The Right Stuff was there, but there's also, I told Scott this, that the little kid is wearing a Jaws shirt.
Yes.
And then when the dad is fighting his doppelganger, he knocks him into the water, and the life preserver becomes like the barrels in Jaws to let you know where that character is throughout the rest of that sequence. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely like, I feel like every little reference, it isn't just regurgitating nostalgia. All of the nostalgia regurgitation seems to play a part, especially like the Hands Across America thing could have been such a throwaway joke at the start of the movie. And then it becomes kind of a crucial aspect of the film.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wait, so I need to get back to this concept.
Oh yeah. Sorry.
No, that's fine. It's a lot to unpack here. And since we're doing it live, we're not doing it off of notes. It's just harder to do it that way. So let's just say that scientists made the tethered. It doesn't matter who made them, but like whoever made the tethered made them to control people in Santa Cruz, let's say in the 50s, and they made 20 people, and then those 20 people got they got married and had kids. And so anything that happens up in the world
is happening
magically is created in the tethered world. I think that's magic. I think that there's some sort of sorcery there. I don't think that science could explain that. It's supernatural.
I think it kind of takes away from it, is they're pretty much shadows. So they're the shadows of the people. So like everything that's happening when her shadow, or when the person meets a man and they make love, their shadows are doing the exact same thing.
Except it's like the inversion. So basically what I took away from that is that Red got raped.
She kind of alluded to it, where it was like, I didn't, and she said it, she said, you met a man that you love, blah, blah, blah. And she said, I did the same, but I didn't have a choice whether I loved him or not, because he was his shadow.
But here's the thing that I realized, and I just realized this in the second that we're talking about it. But so for the longest time, I thought, man, that twist at the very end, which we'll just get there because this is the spoiler area. Yeah. The twist is that the whole time the mother that you're following is actually the tethered. And I was like, well, that was super unnecessary. It fucks up everything. But I actually get it now. And what I get is that the villain, quote unquote, Red, who started this whole revolution, is that she wasn't being the shadow. You know what I mean? Like, so if it was the roles reversed and everything played out exactly the same, the shadow has the conscience of a shadow, so it doesn't care. But she has the self-awareness that none of the other ones have. So while she's being forced to have to do things because the shadow dictates her movements, she is aware, like, I don't want to do this. I don't, like, she has all of that self-awareness, which is what turns her crazy, versus if that switch had never happened, this entire thing would have never played out, because they don't have the ability to speak or understand or whatever. They're basically just mute. They're just nothing up there. You know what I mean?
Well, here's the problem with that. I don't like that idea. I mean, that is the implication that Jordan Peele was going for, and this is my complaint of that huge twist. One, Red is not written. Like, her dialogue, she's the only tethered that can speak. And she's not written in such a way that it telegraphs, and it's supposed to telegraph the fact that they switched in 1986. Yeah. Because that story that she tells could have been the same, but
just admitting the twist.
How would she have completely forgotten that she was the human and then Red is actually Abby up topside? And also that brings into the consideration, is the tethered, like the soulless one, controlled by what happens to the human, or is it whichever one is in the tethered realm has to do whatever the human does? Or I think the realm is actually what dictates who does what, but they also were untethered already, in that when Red went topside, she got to dance.
Yeah. Well, and that's, so here's the thing that someone pointed out, like, she quits dancing at 14 and Red mentions, like, you felt it the same way that I felt it. And supposedly it was that because they were still so tethered, she felt that, like, oh, this didn't work out the way I thought it would. She's still conscious and she can, like she realizes what's happening to her and she's going to fight against me eventually. I think that's a lot to read into. But what I did really start to like, well, here's the thing. I questioned that too, because I was like, during the opening scene in the couch, like the opening scene, we're like 30 minutes in the movie, but the scene on the couch, why didn't Red just straight up say, like, you stole my life?
Yeah,
you
know what exactly. I mean? Because it's not like Stockholm Syndrome or whatever, where she doesn't present it in the right way. Like, how would she take on the other side?
Well, and it's funny because I mentioned that to my friends and I was like, you know, wouldn't that be more interesting? Is that, like, the whole movie still plays out the same way, but simultaneously the family's questioning if they're being lied to or not by this evil spirit. And then, like, there's some validity to the twist of, like, oh, she wasn't lying. Like, she really did have her life stolen. But then they came back with, like, yeah, but honestly, if this is the person that you've known your entire life, do you really give a fuck if it's the real person or not?
That is what I was saying. That's like, what I, like, it's, okay, so the horror aspect of Red and Abby being swapped is the fact that the human was raped and in the tethered realm, and that, you know, like all this bad stuff happened to the wrong person, right? Yeah, but it doesn't really change much.
As far as her being a mother and a wife. And
yeah,
all
like
of
she,
that stuff.
She it doesn't, it's almost like there should have been horror on her face when she realizes what she did to her.
Yeah, it shouldn't be the son. Yeah, shouldn't be the son.
I did not like that. It was like the Twilight Zone gotcha that he was trying to do, and I just don't think that it was. It felt like somebody was like, "You need to add something," and he was like, "Well, I guess this will work." And but like really astute, a real astute watch of this movie, kind of shows that it's not a great. I don't know.
The script felt rushed.
The hints are there, and I didn't recognize the hints at the time, but it's like, okay, it makes sense. The tethered can't talk, so when she's silent and having to go through all these therapy sessions, it's not that she's like traumatized. She's trying to learn the language so that she can blend in. And like, it makes sense that Red talks in a raspy voice, because you see that she gets her larynx basically crushed immediately before she can scream in the switch part, and then there's no doctor to fix it. So she has that like busted up speaking ability.
Yeah.
So like there's little things like that that's like, okay, that kind of makes sense. But I feel like, you know, we had a conversation about Hereditary where I said that there's probably tons of Easter eggs in Hereditary that will give you more insight on everything. But the movie like just is so emotionally upsetting that I don't really want to revisit it. Us, I'm definitely going to revisit, and I feel like with each watch, I'm going to find more of the things that are laying the groundwork towards that twist, and I feel like my feelings will be more optimistic towards it, but it could also be the opposite effect, where I keep finding more, like, it'd go either way. I could find more and more things where I'm like, wow, this really doesn't make sense, or be like, oh, okay, the like, cookie crumbs were there the whole time. Like, there was breadcrumbs that led me to this conclusion that I just missed on the first viewing.
Well, you have to let me know, because where I stand right now, this movie has zero rewatchability.
I thought it was a lot of fun.
I really enjoyed the watch, and I would absolutely watch it again and then just switch it off after she kills Red, because that's, to me, where the movie ends. You know, I don't think that you needed that Hands Across America wide shot at the end. It felt a little silly. I like the idea that Santa Cruz is where this experiment or whatever ends.
Yeah.
Because so if there were 20 people originally, and then those 20 people went out, got married, that would magically create 40 people, because and then those 40 people would have, let's say, 40 kids. So that's already 80 people right there. So like, if you have enough tethered. And not every tethered is going to be successful, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing. I mean, I'm curious for you, Scott, because you are definitely the most politically minded out of all of us. It took me doing research to really catch a lot of the political perspective that was happening in this movie, like the villains all being dressed in red and doing like a very Reaganomics activity like Hands Across America, and like, the fact that us also is US, and, you know, lines like we're Americans and kind of it being about the political divide, like all of that completely went over my head until I read an article. I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, that makes a shit ton of sense. But like when you were watching it, where you're like, oh, yeah, no, I'm getting it. I'm on board with this.
No, I really had a lot of fun with it. I loved the thriller shirt, because I think that was actually Jordan Peele saying, this isn't a horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, I love his voice, like as a writer. I just think that he's very clever, because even stuff that's so in your face, like visually in your face, is such a lighthearted little slap that you're like, oh, you cheeky bastard.
Well,
I will say this movie, as far as, and Jordan Peele, I would even say with Get Out, like, I think that Jordan Peele is a 10 out of 10 director. I think every decision he makes as a director is phenomenal. I think that this falls short in the writing And I don't know if he was, like I said, I felt like it felt rushed, but I think that like the ballet scene, like as far as written, didn't make a lot of, like it made sense, but it was, you know, it was very Suspiria. But it was cinematically beautiful. Like it was just so beautiful to watch and look at.
I think that Jordan Peele, more than almost anybody, really represents, though, the positives of having someone who's so good at comedy doing other genres is that they, because comedy, I feel like more than any other genre, is you have to learn how to properly set up something for a payoff. So like you apply that to a thriller, you apply that to a horror film. Like even if it fails, there's still a very well thought out build to that payoff, more so than like, you know, the easy throwaway of just like the child jumps out of the water and pulls someone in. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's like the Jason at the end of Friday the 13th or Carrie and stuff like that. Like they're good jump scares, but like it's not like an earned payoff versus someone who spends their time writing jokes where like every word that you say in your joke should be building up to the punchline more and more.
Did you guys catch the name of his friend's boat?
Was that it Crawl Daddy?
No, that was his boat, his rich friend's boat.
Oh, no, what was his rich friend's boat?
It was B, Yacht. Sorry, I thought it was so funny.
I mean, and that's my one coworker was going to see it with his wife yesterday, and he was like, look, like, my wife hates horror movies. I need to know, like, how bad is this going to be? Is she going to be able to handle it? And, like, she's got very like specific things that she can't handle because of the career that she works, where she's like a therapist for mentally ill people. So like that type of stuff really affects her. And he's like, is it going to be like Hereditary? And I was like, no, it's actually the opposite of Hereditary. I was like, Hereditary, I felt like the tension built throughout the entire movie. Whereas like with Us, the first 20 minutes, I was super tense. And I was like, where is this going to go? And I feel like the movie gets lighter as it goes on. Like it's like, really, oh, it's does, more and more feel good. Like,
yeah, which is funny because you'd think that they would be traumatized from murdering people, but no, they're pretty okay.
Well, I think it's that it takes the humor of like there's a certain point in the movie where you conclude, oh, these four characters are going to be okay. Like you just like kind of know that they're going to survive this whole ordeal. So then it just becomes the fun of like, well, let's see how they survive this ordeal now. Like, yeah. Like, and because like the scene where the daughter's trying to drive and she's like, I've killed more people than anybody. I should be allowed to drive. Like, it's so matter of fact that like that's the humor of it. And I do really like that aspect of the dark comedy.
Yeah. And the fuck the police scene got me. So like that scene actually had me laugh. The only issue was the guy next to me was, yeah, every song was just very loudly singing along. And I was like, sir, first of all, this isn't Mamma Mia.
Wait, you saw it with me?
I was like, this isn't Mamma Mia. And second of all of these songs are very, very famous. You are not impressing anyone. Like, this guy knows all the words to I Got Five on It and Fuck the Police.
And man, I will say that the ending of that movie where they turn I Got Five on It into the most creepy orchestrated version is awesome. Like, and I love that payoff.
And that was the OST too.
Yeah.
They like the, I thought it was so cool.
So I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
I want to talk about how I loved the reveal of there being other tethereds. Cause it's Kate Moss and, you know, like the shitty white family.
So funny. They're so funny in their shittiness.
Yeah. Oh, I guess I should have known that was coming, but then the two sisters just get straight stabbed in the neck. And I'm like, oh, I think I actually did like choke.
It's the most well-earned scare in the movie because it does come out of fucking nowhere.
And it's great.
But it also makes sense.
And it's the closest thing to like unsettling, I guess, in the movie.
Oh,
is
the
like,
sound
she
effect
still
of her
survives throat. And it's just her
the gurgling.
But that woman shows how much of just a white trash Delco piece of shit I am, because it was me, Jade, and a couple, And when she came on screen, everyone was like, oh, the girl from Handmaid's Tale. And I'm like, that's Oz's girlfriend from American Pie 1.
Wait. Elizabeth Moss was in American Pie?
Yeah, she was Oz's girlfriend.
Huh.
Wait, what?
Isn't that her? Am I wrong?
No, that's Mina Savory.
Yeah.
I was way off.
Elizabeth Moss, she was in Mad Men for the entire show.
I was like, you fucking idiot.
Let me see.
Matt, oh, man, that was his way of getting the Beetlejuice.
Yeah, damn it.
So,
Matt, do you know what else she was in?
What else was she in?
Suburban Commando.
Oh,
wait,
dope.
Elizabeth Moss was in Suburban Commando.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I can't believe that's not her. I was way off.
Huh.
All right. Well,
that's it for me tonight.
Well, that's been a horror movie night.
So go see Us. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about, or can we talk about some of the trailers we saw real quick?
No, I think I said everything I want to say.
Scott?
I don't know. I think that's about it, because I don't want people to think that, if you've listened this far, you've probably seen the movie, and I don't want anybody to think that any of us are really shitting on the movie. I just loved the watch. I don't know if I was a person that owned physical media, if I would own it, but I think it's really, really entertaining.
I was going to say, even with me being hypercritical of the last like 10 minutes of this movie, I still think it's a 4.5 out of 5. Like, yeah, it is a very good movie.
I guess I'd have to say the same.
So I want to talk about, there was two trailers that I had somehow just completely avoided until I was in the theater. I knew nothing about Ma, and that movie looks fucking crazy.
now let me say this. That movie looks crazy, but me and Jade have a tier of movies. It's a three-tier system, because we'll see any new horror movie. There is in theaters, renting on our TV, and waiting for Prime. And when we saw the trailer for Ma, we're like, that looks good, but we're waiting for Prime. Like, I don't think I'd want to pay for that movie.
See, well, I mean, that's the difference. You don't have any of the AMCs down there, man. If I'm getting those three movies a week, Ma is definitely on the docket.
Yeah.
But the other one was, I have no clue why they played it before Us, but I know Scott said he didn't get the trailer. But Brian, did you get the trailer for Booksmart?
No.
Okay, so that was just my screening. Booksmart is like a female Superbad, and it looks amazing. It's produced by Will Ferrell, and the concept is it's the valedictorian and the salutatorian at school, and they realize that all the dumbass stoners and partiers also got into colleges, so that they've wasted their entire high school year being goody-goodies. So they're just spending the last day of school getting in all of like the debauchery that they felt like they should have been participating in for the last 4 years. And it just looks like it's a really, like, it's going to be like a fun, entertaining movie. It's got an awesome cast of like little people popping in. But yeah, it's written and directed by Olivia Wilde, which is interesting. So I think I'm going to check that out. I think I remember hearing it got some good responses on, at like South By or wherever it premiered at, but that was the other one that I had seen no trailers for, but was very invested in.
Yeah, no, that my interest has peaked, which is, I can't say for most of the trailers I saw.
Yeah. I also really am interested. I've been seeing the trailer 1,000 times though, so I'm like over it, but The Intruder still looks like it's going to be a good time.
No idea.
Oh, it's a family moves into a house and the old owner just refuses to leave the house. Like, he keeps showing up to cut the grass and stuff. But yeah, that looks pretty decent. That trailer plays before like every even pseudo horror movie that I see.
See, I didn't get any of these. I got Shaft though.
Shaft looks fun.
What is, you guys? I haven't, aside from Ma, like, I didn't get any of these.
Shaft looks, it looks okay.
It's not one that I'm going to feel like I have to see. It'll be like there's nothing going on this Saturday. Maybe I'll go see Shaft.
Yeah.
But like, if I never see Shaft, I'll also feel pretty okay with my life.
Is that Sam Jackson?
Yeah. Well, it's Sam Jackson, an actor playing his son, and then the original chef from the 70s playing the grandfather. And it's all three of them like teaming up. So it's like, okay, well, that could be fun, because it's like always fun to see like where they acknowledge that, like the name, like the idea of like the James Bond thing of like James Bond isn't a person, it's a code name. Like the idea of like, oh no, there's just a bunch of chefs. Like, like it's not just one guy.
Yeah.
So Scott, what did you get then trailer wise?
I actually wrote them down because I knew I'd forget otherwise. Another trailer for Curse of La Llorona. I could not give less of a shit about that. James Wan is, and this is what I was telling Sci-Fi Steve, is that Jordan Peele is a director that I will always go see. I will always be hyped to see anything that he's involved with. I mean, even as a writer, I mean, he would be, he's up there. Like, I'm interested in The Twilight Zone because he's connected.
But he also steps out of his comfort zone with every film, it feels.
But James
like.
Wan.
James Wan has the same tone.
You know, he like, he did The Conjuring, right?
I think he did The Conjuring, the original Saw, Dead Silence. Like, he kind of just leans on specific stylistic choices.
Because, I mean, The Conjuring is a fantastic haunted house movie. I love The Conjuring.
And I don't think that he strikes out every single time. I'm just saying that, like, it gets old. It's the same thing with Rob Zombie. I can love some Rob Zombie movies and hate some others, but, like, the tone is so consistent every single movie that it's frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. So, Curse of La Llorona looks like crap. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood looks pretty cool.
Didn't get that one.
It was a letdown for me, but I'm still excited to see it. It was just, I felt so bait and switched. Because everything leading up to the release of the trailer was like, Quentin Tarantino is doing a movie about the Manson family. And it wasn't until the trailer got released that even on IMDb, it said that for a long time, you know. And then when the trailer got released, it's like, no, it's actually about an actor and stunt double trying to make it into Hollywood during the era of the Manson family, which I still think will be cool. And I still love Quentin Tarantino. It was just kind of a letdown for me. Because I was ready for that trailer to be like, let's see what he does with the Mansons.
Also, I want to clarify, James Wan is not the director of that movie. He's only the producer of that movie.
The Conjuring?
Curse of La Llorona. Yeah, like he's trying to help. I guess it's like, from looking at the director's credits, it's his first real movie. But holy shit, also looking at James Wan's director credits, and I forgot that his like career takes a really weird turn. So he did Saw, he did Dead Silence, he did Insidious, he did The Conjuring, he did Insidious 2 and The Conjuring 2, but then out of nowhere, it's Furious 7, MacGyver, like an episode of MacGyver, and Aquaman.
So, wait, like the Jason Momoa Aquaman?
Yeah.
He directed or produced it?
Directed.
That makes a whole lot of sense. And when, because I actually, so this is what my week looked like this week. Last Sunday, Captain Marvel in theaters. Monday, great. Aquaman at home. Tuesday, oh fuck, I don't even remember what I watched on Tuesday. And then Thursday, watching Us in theaters. Having Aquaman so recently in my brain. That is very much a James Wan film. It's not bad. It's actually probably his best, but it's.
But yeah, I didn't realize he was Insidious and Conjuring because those movies are so interchangeable in my brain.
I didn't want to say it out loud for fear of being wrong, but I was always like, those are kind of the same movie. Just one is Slipknot.
One's Mushroom Head, one's Slipknot. Totally got it.
Mushroom Head. What the fuck?
All right, so I got Pet Sematary, the full final trailer.
Okay.
And I told so excited. I was not feeling it until I had to sit through that trailer. And I like what I'm seeing because it looks like they're taking a couple more liberties with the source material, which most people are going to be like, but I just felt like the original Pet Sematary is very close to the source material. So taking a couple liberties makes gives a little veneer to the concept.
And it's the people who did It, which helps because I feel like It did a really good job of and you know, you can listen to our full episode on it to break it down, but like, it does a really cool job of absolutely not sticking to the source material while having the same vibe of the source material, where you're almost tricked into feeling like it's a faithful adaptation.
Well, and that, I think that's what that's what we were talking about last week with Graveyard Shift, is that Stephen King novels are very hard to adapt to the screen because so much of it is internal monologue and struggle. So to add some more fantastical elements to it really makes it a more palatable thing to watch. Like adding that there is some sort of supernatural presence that resides beneath or in the Pet Sematary's area, really, it does it for me, because obviously I fucking love monsters. So I wasn't feeling it, but I am now on board. But I cannot say the same for Dark Phoenix. And I am very excited for the fact that it will be the end of the Fox X-Men controlled franchise, because Disney now owns all of it.
Yeah, which is its own thing to discuss, because that's really cool news and also like awful.
Well, like, yeah, Disney is a monopoly, but at the end of the day, they're going to have a better chance of making what I have always wanted to see.
That's what I mean. Like, for us as people attending a movie, it is a huge positive us. But like, the thought process behind this whole thing is basically that purchase is to try to shut down Universal Studios.
Oh shit!
Because Universal Studios has a stronghold on all of the Marvel characters and all of these properties owned by 20th Century Fox. So it's like their way of being like, hey, how about we raise how much it costs for you to have The Simpsons in your park, or we renegotiate this thing that says that we're not allowed to have any Marvel characters in our parks past the Mississippi line. Like, it's like a negotiation tactic from that perspective, but it's also because they're launching their own streaming service. So now they can tell Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime that they no longer have access to any of those libraries, so that they can put it in their streaming service. So it's also going to really fuck up like what Netflix has available and stuff.
That's
like that.
That's fine,
so,
because like, Netflix doesn't want to rehost other people's content anyway. They want to be content.
Yeah, they want to just start make their own stuff. Yeah, so I mean, I'm fine. I'm not going to lose my Netflix account over it, but it is going to be like the people who complain that there's nothing good to see Netflix. On Netflix, it's going to get way worse.
Well, like, the thing is that's what I really don't have a problem with more curated streaming services, because you can get more granular with what you want. Like, I don't go to Netflix to watch horror. I go to Shudder.
Yeah, and I think that at the end of the day, if it's going to cost me $50 to have the 7 streaming services that show everything that I want to watch versus $150 for cable bills, like, okay.
Yeah, and like, you can always turn things on and turn things off. Like, you could binge Netflix for a month and then be like, eh, and be like, I'm canceling my subscription this month. That's what should have some sort of tier where you can do 6 months instead of having, or, you know, you buy a pass. I like that. I would like that idea personally, because then I would just save up until the winter, not save up money, but plan out, okay, well, these 4 shows came out in the last 6 months. This winter, I'm just going to spend 3 months binging all the Netflix shit that I didn't watch all year.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Anyway, right, so then I have...
Yeah, let's wrap up the trailers and get out of here.
So the trailer for Endgame, can't wait. Then I got that little trailer, which I could give less of a shit about that movie, but I'm also not the target audience. Got the Ma trailer. Yeah. And then I got this weird... It was like a Cinemark movie pass thing. It was some sort of promotional thing where it was related to Hellboy, and then whatever his name is, the sheriff. And
the sheriff, yeah.
I
got that too.
He's like, that's why I have this movie pass thing. Then don't forget to see Hellboy. And I'm like, well, I don't care about Hellboy, first of all.
I'm not buying the movie pass. How do you like that, sheriff?
I was going to say, so you guys didn't go to an AMC theater,
yeah,
right?
That's
100% why I didn't get that, because they're just pushing that A-list card. They do not want to advertise that there is any other options.
See, I go to Cinemark every time, and there is the same commercial before the movie starts that now just drives me fucking crazy. And it just makes me want to hurt someone, where it's just, it keeps cutting to people, but it doesn't.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Well.
Where they're like, yeah, popcorn nachos. Yeah, like who the fuck is eating that food at the movie theater?
Yeah. like, so, and the thing is, it's like, it starts off where like, it's trying to, like sync them all together. So it's like, oh yeah, this alien movie is supposed to be really good. They say the aliens look like a giant slice of pizza, you know, and like someone else saying pizza.
Fucking
but then it gets
that.
More and more obscure where she's like, oh yeah, they got the new recliners. It's so comfortable. It's like sitting on popcorn. And I was like, that's
seen
not
that
comfortable.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for us reviewing the commercials that we see advertising the movie theaters we go to. We will be back probably in June, I'm going to say, for the next In Theaters Now for Child's Play, because I am fucking hyped for that movie.
I didn't know Aubrey Plaza was in it because I haven't seen a trailer, but that made me a little bit more excited.
It's Aubrey Plaza actually acting instead of just being a goddamn weirdo, so I'm really interested.
All right. Well, that is it. And we'll be back with a regular episode of the show in a couple days. But thank you guys for listening. Oh, I guess I should say, if you listen to this and this is the first time you're listening to Horror Movie Night, this isn't what we're normally like. Go and listen to some dick and fart jokes. I highly recommend the Graveyard Shift episode is pretty good. All right. Bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.